to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on sunny Cocoa, Florida. It is sunny.
It is sunny.
It's still cool, but it is sunny. It's beautiful. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we are heard on the World Wide Web. Everywhere.
All over the World Wide Web. Absolutely. On 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we archive the shows there as well. You can pick by date. You just go on any Monday for the last, I don't know how long it's archived there on that show on there. But then, of course, we share all of that with the pictures and a little blurbs from our day there on all of our social media channels, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And Sita Media Inc. is also, you can also find us on social media as well as our website. Again, Sita Media Inc. And again, after 15 years, we got so many shows on the website and social media. You can search by name and by topic and find all of the great guests that we've had. And today's no different, right, Sita?
That's right. I guess talk is not cheap. So we need to thank our sponsors for helping us stay on air here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. A lot of people want to come on, but they don't understand that Danny Whiting here does not let us just come into the studio and run our mouths and talk and talk and talk. We can't just do that. If that was the case, the whole of Cocoa and Rockledge and Melbourne and Orlando and everybody else would be in the studio just talking away. I mean, we do have to maintain our studio. We have to maintain our mics, the frequencies. And so it takes time, energy, money. Right?
Well, and we love supporting local live radio, local community live radio that's right here. So you want to check out 1510WWBC. They do a few fundraisers each year for not just the community, but also to keep all of us to be able to have a voice and have a responsible voice.
Yeah, and we want to give a shout out to Kim, the owner of our station, that has allowed us to be on air here at WWBC. And we all know that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And we've tried over the last 15 years to be very responsible on our show and kind of really fair and balanced with our guests. And for those of you listeners who are tuning in for the first time, on Mondays from 1 to 2, Ellen O'Neill and myself, I said it correct. Completely forgot the little part. And I sit here and we talk to people who want to speak about anything that they have a platform for, whether it's financial literacy, insurance, the environment. Some people want to talk about writing a book. Some wants to promote a book. Some wants to get started with a book. We've become like a place for Authors Central as well. And we're joined by Allie. Allie Tamber joins us. Allie met us through her husband, who was one of our guests.
Yes.
A long time ago. And so Allie comes with Ellen, and she kind of sits with us and hangs out with us. And, of course, Danny runs our board. And it's no different every Monday. But it's always a different topic.
Yeah.
Right? So thank you all for being here as usual.
And, again, to all of the folks out there, in case I'm sure we'll remember to do this, but happy Thanksgiving week to everybody. Don't forget, it's a short week, but it does end in turkey and shopping. So,
yes,
well, two of my favorite things.
Well, our show is going to be quite a wonderful show today because we've had our guest, Ivor Aline. Aline is on the phone, and he's the president of Intrinsic Wealth Management. He is going to speak with us a little bit this morning about basic Medicare Advantage plans, supplemental plans, prescription plans. And, you know, people do call the show and ask us for referrals for certain things. And this is right up the alley because the year is coming to an end and people need to pay attention to their plans. Our second segment is with a gentleman, Mr. Brian Welch. He is going to be talking about his book, and his book is called The Gift of a Broken Heart. He wrote a book after his son passed away to addiction. And so he's going to talk to us a little bit about how he felt and how he's using his experience to help others. So that's second segment. But for now, we're going to go right to our phone. I think Ivor Aline is on. And Ivor, thank you for calling in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends again. And you are going to be a bit of a regular recurring guest because you are going to be calling in to talk to us about financial literacy, not just today, but a few other times as well. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being on your show again today.
Yeah, and look at you. Your voice is coming through crisp. So tell our listeners what state you're calling in from.
I'm calling in from the tri-state area, particularly from New Jersey. Some days I'm in New York, seldom in Connecticut, but today I'm calling in from New Jersey.
New Jersey, that's Ellen State.
It is.
That's where you were born and raised, girl.
That's exactly right.
Best tomatoes in the world.
Yes.
Best tomatoes in the world.
So let's talk a little bit about you and get our listeners back to familiarize them a little bit of who you are and what you do. And, you know, when I think about you calling in our show, there's something that I read on Facebook, and it says, just be a good person. Love who you can. Help who you can and give what you can. And that's you. You're giving us your expertise and knowledge and experience so that people can move forward in their lives. And you're giving great financial advice as well. So tell us what you do and let our listeners hear all about your business.
Well, I work in the capacity in the advisory space on finances. I considered my approach to this sector as strategic. The name of my firm is Intrinsic Wealth Strategies, and we've been doing this for over 25 years in the space of whether it's insurance investments or planning. That's the low bar. But when you start to deal with wealth management, it gets much more specific, gets more strategic, and much more detailed. My conversation with you today, however, due to the time frame that we are close to the end of the year, I felt it was necessary to have a conversation as it relates to one aspect, what I like to refer to as mandatory health care.
Yes.
Mandatory health care is required by us to implement that at specific ages, particularly at age 65, one knows it as Medicare. And it can be very confusing because there's so many aspects to if I'm working, can I have it? What is part A? What is part B? What is part C? I call it the alphabet soup because you don't know exactly what it is. So basically, I felt that the fact that open enrollment, which ends on December 7th, approximately 2 weeks from now, it would be very worthwhile for those who are about to get into that phase or attempting to make a decision regarding this matter to give some fundamentals.
I'm glad you are because, you know, at this time of the year is when people start talking about their dental plan, their vision plan, their hearing plans. And if they're under 65, folks can get their insurance from their employer. They can go on the Obamacare exchange, and they can get it that way. But the people who are turning 65, let's talk a little bit about them. Are they required to apply for Medicare at the age of 65, and how does one go about doing that?
Okay. Let me jump back a bit to first define what it is and who. It is a federal program. Yes, people at 65 or older are eligible at that time to apply. Also allows people who are under age 65 too, but those are individuals with disabilities, and especially if one has end-stage renal disease, any kind of permanent kidney failure requiring dialysis can be on Medicare, and they don't have to be 65. And the important thing about it as well is that citizenship is required because you have to be a United States citizen or lawfully present within the United States. And the thing about it is that it requires 5 continuous years of being here. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is because as much as there is what is known as Part A and Part B, for the majority, for probably 95 or 97% of individuals, when they get to that age, they do not pay for Part A. And it's only because they have had continuous work or making contributions into the system over the years. Now, with regards to Part A, you heard me say Part A and Part B and Part C. So when you're dealing with original Medicare, you're dealing with hospital care as it relates to Part A. It covers like the inpatient stays at a hospital. Sometimes it's referenced in certain aspects as skilled nursing, hospice care, all that is Part A. And like I said, most people don't pay for that because either themselves or their spouse, while they were paying their Medicare taxes while working, contributed into Part A.
And that's a nice way. I'm glad you're explaining it that way because a lot of people don't understand how Medicare works. And me working in long-term care and watching Part A, Part B, Part C, Part D, therapy, durable equipment, and all that. Thank you so much for clearing up the part with Part A. And I guess now you can tell us about Part B.
Certainly. So Part B deals with the quote-unquote medical services. And that's inclusive of like your doctor's visits, their services, their outpatient care. Medical supplies as well is also referenced or categorized in Part B, and some preventative services, not all, you know. But Part B is the one that requires a monthly premium. And there's no offense to people, but I said anyone, the Bobbsey twins or Irma, you know, and Maggie. And then what do we mean by that? Because is Irma is the income related to medical adjustment amount, and Maggie is modified adjusted gross income. Those two things, we're not going to speak about Social Security today, but Maggie, you know, deals with that on the Social Security. And I think last time I was on, I dealt with provisional income. But now there is another way, and I see it as a form of taxation. They might have all these highfalutin names around them and all these sophisticated terms. But at the end of the day, the government is after taxing you if you make a certain amount of income on Part B. And there is, it's usually a very major surprise to many when they say, listen, I just retired. And they see this brochure that shows people smiling and don't know why these people are smiling until they have to pay this extra premium. But Part B deals with the medical services. And the distinction there as well, and it's worth mentioning, is the fact that many times individuals are of the impression that once I have Parts A and Parts B, I'm covered.
And that's where they make the biggest mistake of their lives because they're not covered for home health or colostomy supplies or IV supplies. They're not. And I wonder why more people don't talk about what you're talking about, Medicare, and all the parts of it and, you know, educate the public because people, it's like a rude awakening when you get to be 65 and you think that all I need is Part A.
Well, Sita, I must tell you, no one is looking forward to be 65. Now you're a senior citizen, you know. No one is looking at it, you know.
Yeah. So what's
you know,
when
you don't want to talk about that. You know, it's much easier to speak of your portfolio, you know, when you get to retirement. It's very ambiguous. But now when you start about Medicare, oh, yeah, it gets very specific. People know, okay, you're 65 plus, right? Yeah. But anyhow... the thing about this as well is that, yes, it's something that, you know, especially when you're an employee at a firm and they are taking care of your group medical and all you have to do is to have a contribution if required to be deducted from your paycheck and you have your plan. You know, you have your little open enrollment, you select which company. But it's amazing that when you get to 65 and you now have to make a selection, and you see this red, white, and blue card show up, and you say, oh, it says Part A. Do I have to select it, or do I not? What about Part B? So there are rules and regulations as it relates to if you're self-employed and you have less than 20 employees at the firm, you are required to apply for Part B as well. You ought to. Let's put it that way. And the reason why I'm saying you ought to, because it can trigger a penalty that is never removed until the day you die when you're paying for extra because you didn't do a timely enrollment. All right? But if you're with a firm that is large, you know, let's say you're at a board of ed, you work for the city, there are some people who are, listen, I'm not ready to retire. We're speaking to someone, they're 79, and, you know, only now considering whether they should retire. They are not mandated to take Part B.
Really?
Part A is going to come. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because Part A will kick in automatically at 65, yes. and if you decide to work, and you work, you're 79. You don't have to take Part B. How come?
Well, it's because of the regulations that if you are less than 20 employees, you don't have that waiver, quote unquote, from the federal government to say, listen, I can take this at a later date. If you're working in a big firm, you can, but there's a term that they tend to use as referred to as credible coverage, to the fact that when you leave your employer, let's say you work until 80, 85, whatever it is, you need to have that letter, that document that substantiates the fact that you are now retiring. That letter or document will allow you to go and apply for Part B without any penalties. That's what is important. So based upon if you're a small self-employed with five people, yes, take your plan A, take your plan B, and move on. If you're at a big company, over 20 employees, you have that option to consider. Well, you don't have to. Now, some people, there are a few situations that I've seen where individuals say, listen, I'm going to go on Medicare Part B, only because the plan benefits and the premium costs are much more attractive than what my firm is providing. So you don't have to do those analytics or analysis at a time, but some people have done that, and they say, you know what, I'm going to go to Part B.
Right, so they skip the employer-sponsored insurance, mm-hmm. and they go on the open market. I think Ali has a quick question for you.
Hi.
Sure.
Good morning. Good afternoon now. Yeah. Feels like morning. I know I've heard the words, but what is an advantage plan?
Oh. Permit me to say it's a disadvantage.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's good to know.
You need to be given this lecture to everyone when they turn 65. It should be like a birthday present, 10 minutes, whatever.
Right. Yeah. So put this video
right.
in.
Yeah.
You know, I usually like to refer it like that jokingly, but and only because you're of the impression that it's truly an advantage. It depends. So let's say, for example, first we need to know and need to be aware that the advantage plans are the plans that are considered after basic Medicare.
When so it's I an addition?
I'm referring to Parts A and Parts B.
So
that
it's,
advantage yeah. plan that you're referring to is now considered to be Part C.
Okay.
And it's inclusive of doctors. It's inclusive of prescription drugs. And as a result of that inclusion, that is what is required in majority of instances that when we see that open enrollment from October 15th to December 7th, and all these companies are flooding your mailbox with literature to select this company or that company or the other company, is because when you are in an advantage plan, it's important that you assess whether or not your doctors will still be in the network, your hospitals will still be in the network, your prescriptions are covered on what tier, as to what costs.
Yeah, that right there is a whole show by itself, the different tiers of medication. Yeah. That's like a whole hour show.
Yeah, so getting back to basic Medicare, which is A and B, and I'll come back to that Advantage plan. Like, I've encountered situations where people just, I have Medicare. And they will show their red, white, and blue card and think that's it. I don't have to do anything else. I'm not so sure about that. They need to be aware that so many things are not covered when you just have the red, white, and blue card. It's important to recognize there's something called Medigap, which is the supplemental plan. Or you can have the Advantage plan, which is the Part C that I was referring to. Now, when you start to do supplement plans, they can range, and that's where I like to call the alphabet soup. It ranges from plans A to plans N, as in Nancy. They used to have a plan F, as in Frank. Frank disappeared the end of 2019, 2020, somewhere around there. Don't hold me to that. Somewhere in that vicinity. But plans F is no longer available. Unless you are quote-unquote grandfathered in, you can keep it. Now, the interesting thing is that plans G, as in George, and N, those are the two kind of common ones that we see people gravitate to these days. And so it's important to have a supplement plan in conjunction with the A, B, the red, white, and blue card, keep it simple, which is parts A and parts B. Or in order for you to have the quote-unquote Advantage plan, you still need a red, white, and blue card, which is Part C.
So, Ivor, then now, would you say then that it's already 1:20, oh my gosh, and I have to get this question in. How are prescription drugs covered by Medicare? And then should someone apply to have the Part D as well?
Very good question. Okay, yes, we know we're going down the alphabet, A, B, C, now we're at D. So D is dealing with prescriptions and prescriptions only. And it's important to recognize that when you have that red, white, and blue card flashing around, you don't have prescription. Unless you have it within the Advantage plan or unless you applied for a Plan D, which, you know, is a separate plan. Now, there and it's important, I'm glad you brought it up, because another thing that happens as well is a person might say, listen, I'm in good health, I don't need any prescriptions, and as a result of that, you know, I'm not going to apply for plans D. I'll just do my A and B. Well,
that's a bad mistake, because you don't know what lab test is going to show up, and then it's going to show up you have an abnormality in something that would require prescription drugs. That's a huge risk, I think, people take.
Yes.
So prescription is different. Prescription different from supplemental? A prescription plan?
Okay. Yes, it is. Because I'm glad you asked that question as well, because as much as you have the red, white, and blue card, which is part A, you know, Part A and B, the supplemental plan is optional. It's not mandated. So you decide whether or not you can think, listen, down the road, I might need good care. Now, the beauty about the supplemental plan is the fact that once a doctor accepts basic Medicare, you can go from here to the best hospitals in New York, or you can go to Arizona. Once they accept Medicare, you're covered. When you're in the Advantage plans, the fact that they are restricted to the doctors in the network, restricted to the hospitals in the network, and each year those doctors could be in or out by choice or by force, you know?
Yeah.
That, listen, you don't, and people are not
state.
Aware of that.
Sometimes they're by state as
exactly.
well. Because a lot of people have the Health First Advantage plans here, and they find out very quickly if they travel to another state, there's a hiccup. There's a huge hiccup there.
Exactly.
In other
exactly.
words, then you can't leave the state of Florida.
You have
to stay home all.
Yeah.
So and now even, you know, and of course we're the Sunshine State where everybody retires. So maybe they're doing a little bit more commercials lately, but it gets so convoluted with all of this now saying, oh, you get this Aetna, you know, you know, name the company, right, a plan, and you, and they'll give you a free card that you can go grocery shopping with, and they, you know, and so it's like, you know, it almost feels like it's beginning to get kind of like scammy a little bit because
a little used card,
how's this work? Why am I buying groceries with my medical card?
Right,
I'm a little confused here.
So, yeah, they attempt to incentivize you because, you know, the companies, let's say there are three different companies, A, B, and C, are they promoting plans G or N or whatever. The what is interesting to note is that regardless of the company, the plans are exactly the same. However, they are priced differently. Hence the reason the importance of shopping it. Because I may like the, my plan G or whatever it is, but guess what? Down the street, it's like you going to a car dealer, is the same Chevy Tahoe, all the bells and whistles in a vehicle, but you go down to another dealer, and the dealer has a different $5,000 price tag.
So in other words, people that need to do their homework, Ivor. They have to shop around. So for listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mr. Ivor Alleyne. He is the president of Intrinsic Wealth Management, and we're, our conversation today
Strategies.
And we're talking to him today about Medicare parts, A, B, C, D, whatever letters that come after it. So you know what? There are differences between basic Medicare, the Advantage plans, the supplemental plans, the prescription plans. And one could get bogged down with these plans when one turns 65 and then hears, wait a minute, so you mean Part A doesn't cover everything? And they say, no, Part B is coming out of your Social Security, but you got to have the other parts of it because hospitalization, equipment, drugs, whatever. In 2 minutes or less, because we're going to run out of time, can you tell our listeners here in Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about all these basic plans and supplemental plans?
The basics and the supplemental.
And the prescription, because people who are listening, they're probably thinking, oh, my God, that's a lot of letters behind Medicare at this point.
I think what is important to know are the penalties. For example, if you have the Part B, you can run into about a 10% penalty, you know, for delayed enrollment. All right? Similarly for delay enrollment in Part A, but in most cases, people working, they very seldom would run into that. However, Part D, the prescription is the one that they jump at you. It might only be 1% penalty, but it's per month once you delay enrollment, and it's multiplied, you know, each year by the, let's say we rounded it up to every 10 cents. But that 1% never gets off your calculation each and every year. You carry that penalty for life. So the penalties are important. The other thing about it is that with regards to penalties, it's important to recognize that if you say, listen, I'm going to start with a supplement plan, but I want to go to an Advantage. Like someone the other day, you know, there are two situations I like to reference. A gentleman who has major heart surgery, ran about $135,000. He did not pay a nickel. Why? He had a supplemental plan, okay? And he had the old one. He had the plan F because he's up in age. He's had it a while. There's another situation where a person did not apply for, they do have the supplemental plan, but they said, listen, this is so expensive. I can't afford it. So guess what? If this person decides to go to an Advantage plan, or they have to do it within the open enrollment period.
That's a good question, because we need to find out, is everyone over 65 required to participate in open enrollment every year?
It's predominantly for those who have the Advantage plans.
Okay.
And those who have plans, they for prescriptions to shop around and see who is best. For the person who does not have the necessity or the requirement to be taking prescriptions, they're in good health, I would encourage them to take the cheapest, the most cost-effective prescription plan. Because if later in life, 4 or 5 years down the road, you have a diagnosis that requires a prescription, you would be penalized, like I was just saying, for all those years since you were 65 that you didn't take advantage of it. And a lot of people are not aware of that. That's one thing that is important to note. And with regards to changing from a supplement plan because it got too expensive and you're up in age, like this person I was referring to, and I want to have a new supplement plan, is important to note that it will go through medical underwriting. And if you have a diagnosis on their list of questions and you put, yes, I have this situation, chances are you'll be declined. So it's important. So one really needs to sit down with someone, have a thorough conversation, not only in the moment, but project into the future as to what it is. But yeah, it might appear to be attractive.
So some people would have Medicare Part A and they could have Part B with a company like, say, Blue Cross Blue Shield or whatever. But then they can have Part D with, like, say, Humana, because they've shopped around.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people do that, and they find that they get a better bang for their buck if they shop around. But give us your website and your contact information, Mr. Ivor Alleyne at Intrinsic Wealth Strategies Incorporated, so that if somebody wanted to speak to you, the founder and president of this great website that you're going to give us, they can call you and get some information.
Okay, the best number to reach us at the office is 973-415-8106. That is 973-415-8106. And the email, I know a lot of people like to do War and Peace on their questions, but that would be ivor@intrinsicwealth.com.
Yeah, and you know, Ivor, I was just thinking, like, a lot of people don't know that original Medicare doesn't cover routine health exams, hearing aids, or exams to fit hearing aids. I don't think we educate the elderly enough on what original Medicare covers or not.
I agree with you, because when you start to think of dental work, or you start to think of getting glasses and so forth, those things are not covered. And there are some plans that will try to encourage you to join us, because we will kick in a dental plan that is somewhat basic in nature, but it appears to be attractive, and it's better than nothing, I would guess. But yeah, that's one of the situations that most people are not aware of. So quite a bit is not covered. And I think that's one of the first questions that when you're sitting down with anyone to do your Medicare or Medicare Advantage or supplement plans, find out what's not covered.
Yeah.
You know, I remember one time a person thought long-term care is covered. No, skilled nursing and so forth.
I know this is a Christian station, but I could say hell to the no. That Medicare is not going to cover you staying there, not at all, or help at home. But we've got to wind down this segment. But man, you gave us a lot of really great information and things to think about. Very, very great
generated
insights.
Generated more questions too. Yeah.
And we will certainly post that on our site. Ellen will take it over from here.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely. And make sure
interesting
that
segment.
If you have questions after this segment, you definitely call Ivor and make sure that you get all of your questions answered. Of course, you can send him an email or contact him through the website. We'll make sure we post all of that on all our social media. We're going to take a minute and listen to our sponsors real quick that support our show, and we will be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a
There's certified something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. I have to say, a nice, cool Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. And I'm speaking very fast because I want to get to another segment with Mr. Brian Welch.
That's right. So all over the World Wide Web, 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that Listen Live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we download everything with the pictures and a little blurb of how great the show was on all of our social medias, as well as our website, SitaMediaInc.com.
Right. And our second segment is going to be with an author, Mr. Brian Welch. He is going to speak to us this morning about his book. It's called The Gift of a Broken Heart. And sadly, Mr. Welch lost his son. His son passed away. His 25-year-old son passed away to addiction. And Mr. Welch is going to speak with us about how he's taken his experience and helping others through his book. And I love the cover of your book. It's very calming, I have to say.
Well, thank you. Yes, I thought it turned out well.
It's beautiful. And you could tell there's a story behind that story of that cover as well. So, Mr. Welch, talk to us a little bit. You had a lot of businesses with social and environmental responsibility. You were the chief executive of Mother Earth News, Mindful Magazine. You've written a couple of books. And here you are living in Kansas on a ranch with your beautiful wife, Carolyn, raising cattle. And it kind of sounds like you found your paradise a little bit there.
Well, I don't know if I believe in an earthly paradise exactly, Sita, but it's a great lifestyle, and we do love living here.
Yeah, well, you know, life is an earthly journey, right? We're all just passing through, and we're not sure for how long, but it is a journey on planet Earth, and I think every day we wake up is a good day just to find life with purpose, and it seems as though you have. So talk to us a little bit about yourself and how you got to Kansas like Dorothy.
Oh, well, I didn't click my heels three times. Dorothy did. I came here to take over a business that was here. My business partners bought the business, and I came here a long time ago, 1996. to run the business. And it's been a wonderful place to have a home. We raised our two kids here. They were in elementary school when we came. And sadly, as you said, my son became addicted to opiates when he was in college and struggled for 5 or 6 years, had a very hard time. It's a very devastating illness, and died in 2013. He had by then moved on to alcohol and effectively drank himself to death. So we went through what must be one of the hardest experiences that that a human being can have, and certainly every parent, I think, understands how scary that is and how painful it is. And my book is about my experience of that and the fact that I discovered in the darkest parts of my grief that along with being devastated and completely overwhelmed, I also felt a new warmth toward other people, a new sense of compassion toward other people who were suffering, and a new sort of open-heartedness. And I felt like it was my responsibility, perhaps, to talk about that. And by writing a book about it, I guess I had the opportunity of giving my son a legacy, a kind of a positive legacy through my experience. So that's what the book is about.
Right. And grief is a part of human life, right? And so many people try to avoid grief at times. But, you know, I'm Indian, and we cry a lot, and we talk a lot, and we hug a lot, and we talk a lot, and we keep telling people until, but the grief never really goes away. But it does help if you talk about it, and you could have like-minded people that went through similar circumstances, because that grief, I mean, I think you just need more and more love to help combat that grief.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. I think living with a constant consciousness of the fact that we are grieving and that all people are grieving is a good way to open our hearts to each other, you know, and as we encounter other people out there in the world day in and day out, to keep in mind that they also are grieving. I mean, we're human beings. So we idealize about our families and our safety, our children and our society. And everything we love eventually dies, of course. And society doesn't live up to our expectations, to our ideals. Other people disappoint us sometimes. All these things generate grief in human beings. And I think, you know, a brokenheartedness is a sort of natural state for people. I think that it enhances our humanity to treasure our broken hearts, to understand our own grief and carry it with us.
Yeah, and I think your book explores the simple acknowledgement of the shared that we're vulnerable, all of us, and we go through traumas and grief, and if we share it together, I think it makes it a little bit easier, right? Because no one is here on the planet to live forever. And,
no.
And at some point in this journey of life, we're going to experience grief, whether it's of a parent, a pet, a job, a loved one. And being a nurse working in a long-term care facility, we see a lot of people that leave the planet at the late stages of life. And it's very difficult. But you're right. Sometimes you feel as though some people don't approach grief the way you think they should.
Well,
don't you think that's a personal
thing?
Of
course, you know, I think people go through all kinds of calisthenics in their personal lives and in their psychology to try to avoid grief, to reassure themselves that it won't come to them. And of course, that's pointless. I also found I also found that, in my deepest grief, and being a parent in particular who had lost a child to mental illness, I had to acknowledge the possibility that I was, to some degree, culpable, to some degree or another, culpable for his illness. I wasn't a perfect parent.
Yeah, you felt like you blamed yourself because you probably felt like you missed some of the warning signs.
Well, I had to accept that that might be true and that I might have been responsible in a variety of ways for his illness. And I had to accept that my wife and I had to accept that we could never know what degree to which we were or were not responsible or culpable in his illness. And, in that state of mind, I realized that I had thousands of narratives in my head mm-hmm. about why we were safe, why we wouldn't be devastated by something like this, why, at the end of the day, most of those narratives were like, because of our educations or our careers or our healthy lifestyle or something or another. And I realized in that place that those narratives that we create to make ourselves feel safer, in fact, also make us feel superior in a way. They're narratives about our superiority over those people who are suffering. And, I concluded I didn't really want to generate narratives like that. I wanted, to the extent I could, to live in connection with other people in our shared vulnerability.
And find common ground. So, you found common ground.
There's a thing called radical acceptance at some point that right. you have to, and it almost becomes like cognitive behavior therapy. You have to constantly say to yourself that, you remind yourself that, yes, you did, maybe you did have a part in it, or maybe you did have some way of participating. But at the same time, the radical acceptance means that if you, even though you feel that way, it doesn't change anything, and at some point you have to find it within yourself to be better about it.
Peace, exactly. Being in a nurse in nursing school, they taught us about the Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the five stages of grief, which is, denial and anger and acceptance, and then, all the other things. And some people get bargaining and then depression, right? And you go through all those stages with grief, but I think grief is also cultural, don't you think?
I think it varies from one culture to another, certainly. And some cultures have much more sophisticated mechanisms for carrying grief or going through grief, and some less so. But I still think that every human being is vulnerable to deep grief. And I think every human being can be devastated by it.
Yeah, and as you were writing the book, did you find that it changed the way in which you see yourself as you wrote this book, and kind of like a cleansing of the soul, a spiritual journey that you had writing this book?
Well, it changed me, I think, Sita. That's a very good question. It took me 8 years to write the book, writing, fairly consistently over that time and throwing it away. Because when I started writing, I wasn't ready to embody the voice I thought the book needed. I thought that I needed to be a person who could communicate these ideas with the sort of uncertainty and a kind of humility built into it, because fundamental to the subject matter is the necessity of acceptance. And I'm glad that, that you all raised the idea of radical acceptance. I personally think that acceptance might be the most important skill we can work on as human beings. And that's not to say that we stop aspiring to do good things. It's not to say that we lose all ambition. But it is to say that there's a lot about being human that is sad and that does precipitate grief. And accepting those inevitable aspects, mortality being sort of the most obvious one, accepting those basic terms of living a human life is, I think, the key to living a joyful human life.
Yes, I totally agree. Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about your boy. You wrote the book, and you're doing your best to, in some way, carry on his legacy, what he left behind for us humans on planet Earth. Right? Tell us a little bit about him. What did he like, and what was he like as a child growing up?
Oh, he's a lovely kid. You know, a little blonde boy, a little blonde-headed boy, and very sweet, very affectionate, and very sensitive. And, you know, the most wonderful things about him were things that came out of his sensitivity. He was wonderful with us when we were sad. He was wonderful with his friends and with anybody who he encountered who was hurt or sad. He had a wonderful capacity for that sort of thing. But his sensitivity also made life difficult for him in a lot of ways. You know, he really struggled when other people were suffering. He really felt for them. He was, you know, he hated transitions. Leaving on vacation seemed always to sort of set him off, even if he wanted to go on vacation, because of his innate sensitivity. And then I think, you know, he once told me, the first time that he tried an opiate, his anxiety and his sensitivity was suddenly gone, and that felt really wonderful to him, and he wanted to feel that way all the time. And so in a way, what was most wonderful about him was also what made him so vulnerable to drug addiction and ultimately took his life.
Yeah, because he felt like it was helping him. So where did you find your support after he passed away? Because it's important for all of us to remember that the grieving process is different for everyone. It's grief is not a one-size-fits-all. Everybody grieves in a different way, right? So, and it's crucial for our mental health and our physical health and our emotional health to grieve in a way that the whole family is actually grieving when something like this happens, right? So where did you find your strength to go through the grieving process?
Oh, gosh. What a question that is. The things that helped, you know, we had some wise friends who would just be with us and acknowledge the sadness and acknowledge the loss without really trying to say anything magical or provide any kind of, you know, therapeutic wisdom of any kind. Really just people's company was probably more helpful than anything. And then, you know, I think having a spiritual practice can be so valuable. You know, it connects us with a many, many generations of people who've gone through grief. It puts everything in a slightly larger context. I think if we have some spiritual practice that connects us to other people who are striving to live their best human life. I'm a Buddhist, but I do write in the book about the profound value of Christianity and the remarkable fact of an omnipotent God who sent the being that he loved more than any other into this world to suffer, to be tortured, to be killed in a really grotesque way. And for me, that gives Christians a God who understands grief, a God who's effectively grieving and brokenhearted. And I find something of really great beauty and really great value. My own Buddhist practice also, it takes human suffering as a given and grief as a natural part of our consciousness and gives us tools for working with that. And those were, to me, of course, very valuable.
Yeah. Well, you know, love is the force that moves the universe, right? And I think in Hinduism, which I'm a born Hindu, you know, in all our homes, we used to have this picture of a child that's born and then different stages of life, from the child to the toddler to the teenager, young man, then middle-aged man. And then there was an old man with a walking stick, and then there he was on the deathbed, right? And so we knew we were born to die. But when you lose a child or a loved one, you know, when you weren't expecting it, it seems like the grief is very difficult. And did you find at any time that you were blaming, like, the medical doctor or family members for lack of support? Or sometimes people feel anger towards our spiritual beings, or you blame yourself. Did you find that you went through stages of that when he passed?
No, not really. That wasn't something that we experienced. And, you know, the another thing I will say is acceptance is very important in that. If, you know, my wife Carolyn was my most important source of support, and I hope I was the same for her, and I think I was. You know, we were the only two people who'd gone through this same thing, and we went through it together. But I would warn anyone who loses a child, if either parent ever blames the other one, that has to be the end of the marriage, I think.
Yes.
The implications of that are just too heavy for any relationship. And thankfully, we didn't feel inclined to do that. We didn't do that. And by the same token, how could we blame any particular person?
Right.
You know, we could blame ourselves, but we can't know to what degree we were responsible. We could blame the pharmaceutical companies that flooded the market with opiates, but that was all part of a bigger system. And, you know, blaming, I don't know that I would have found any value in that at all.
But what you could do is try to speak with, you know, a person in the legislative body locally or in the state house or federal and say, hey, this is something I want you to look into. Our markets is flooded with opiates or fentanyl.
And I think that's
a good way of taking that grief and putting it into action in another way instead of blaming someone.
Sure. And in my case, I chose to write this book.
Yeah. So we have a minute left, and I wanted to ask you really quick in this minute. Did you find that you had like a therapeutic or spiritual presence as you wrote this book, like in your headspace? Was there something that motivated you spiritually as you were writing? Because it is a pretty hard book to write. It's difficult to put this into words when you're thinking about your boy.
You know, I felt that it was an assignment, and I wouldn't try to say exactly who was directing me or what was directing me. But yes, I felt a spiritual
support.
I felt like it was a spiritual mission and something I had to do.
Yeah. And I think you did celebrate his life with this book. And so for listeners, we're speaking with Mr. Brian Welch. He's an author, and his book is called The Gift of a Broken Heart. And it's a very moving recount of the deep grief that Mr. Welch experienced when he lost his 25-year-old son to addiction. What a wonderful segment, Ellen. The book just described the pain that he felt and what he can use to help all of us here.
And I love the fact that you called it The Gift, because, you know, as you're explaining it, I truly do feel what you're feeling when you call it The Gift. I truly felt that. So we can find your book on Amazon, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes,
and
that's
any
right.
Other spots that we'd be able to find the book on? So I make sure I tell all of our listeners and get it on our social media.
You can come to the book's website, thegiftofabrokenheart.com.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you again so much for sharing your story. And again, to all of our callers and to all of our listeners that are out there, a very, very happy Thanksgiving to all of you this week as you're celebrating with your families. Think about small business. Think about the folks that are writing books. And for those of us who don't have people that are going to be celebrating this Thanksgiving with us, you know, reach out to them as well. Make sure that you reach out to the folks that might be suffering this year as well.
Mr. Welch, before you go off air as a writer, what is your spirit animal? What animals did your son like?
Well, he loved all animals, but my spirit